Welcome in to another edition of the Half Court Press. I'm John Niatawa, joined by Chris Hetty. Chris?
John?
We're back. To talk a little bit about our teams. Creighton and Nebraska both played overseas. Creighton was in Australia. Nebraska was in Italy. We both watched live streams.
Yeah, but mine was at noon and yours was at 4 a.m.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. I did have to watch a live stream in the dark. Actually, it was storming at the time when I was watching.
Really?
Yeah, we had like a thunderstorm.
Why'd you watch it in the dark?
It's a good question. I don't know. It just felt right. It was 4 a.m.
The lights too early for lights. Yeah.
Right.
Did you have like a giant gallon of coffee?
I did actually. Yeah. I actually prepared the coffee the night before, so I was ready to go.
How much did your soul like cry when you set the timer for like 3:55?
Yeah, exactly.
To prepare the coffee.
3:35 a.m. was the timer. It was tough. It was tough,
but you got
I made
to watch
it through. Got to
I
watch
guess.
Basketball in August. That's great. Mm-hmm. You got to watch Nebraska. How many times did you get to see him? Twice?
Just once.
Oh, just once? Mm-hmm. The first game was, mm-hmm. was streamed, and then after that. So it's hard to gauge. We said this before when we recorded our podcast a couple weeks ago, previewing these two teams' trips out there. It was hard to sort of get it's going to be hard to get a lot of assessments and to make some concrete declarations about what we learned and what these teams are going to be. But learned a few things, mm-hmm. have a few questions. Mm-hmm. I guess, was there a player or maybe a thematic sort of takeaway that you had after watching Nebraska play once and then seeing the box scores the way that the stats kind of rolled out there?
Yeah, there are a couple things that stood out to me.
I guess I forgot to mention Nebraska went 4-0, by the way.
They did. They mm-hmm. they were undefeated.
And a couple of the teams that they beat pretty soundly, didn't other Division I teams kind of have some issues with them?
Yeah, and there's this like, so a lot of these teams, it's hard to gauge for a lot of reasons because you don't know how good the players are going to be. But you also don't know who the players are going to be because some of these academies, they've got like 50 guys. And then they'll be like, who wants to come play? And just you play with who you've got. And then the last team that Nebraska played, it was this academy that basically sent out a bat signal like, hey, any basketball players in the area want to play? And they're like, yeah. And so like 15, 20 guys showed up and then they played.
Okay.
So like that's
the roster's
much,
changed. So, you can't really compare the results.
Yeah, so that's why it's much. But at the same time, if you're someone like Minnesota and you do play a team that's an academy and you don't know who the other players are, and then you trail after three quarters and only win by five, that's different because that's like, oh, yikes, there's some issues. Anyway, so the reason why I know all of that is because that happened in Minnesota. The college basketball, Big Ten college basketball community in general was like, oh, yikes, Rich Pitino, because he also got a tech.
He got a teed in the
he got
game.
Teed up in Italy, wow. Which is like just the most Pitino thing.
Brings to mind, didn't Greg Marshall?
I mean, this
isn't. Didn't he get teed up in like Canada or something?
Wouldn't
like
surprise
that?
Me at
I'm
all.
I'm pretty sure he did a couple
like,
years
wouldn't
back.
Wouldn't surprise
like,
me at all.
Some video. Anyway, yeah, he probably shouldn't be getting teed up in an exhibition game overseas.
No!
But
no, it just shows that what's going on.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I know all this because Minnesota reporters were explaining it to people that were like kind of jumping on Minnesota.
Alarm bells are ringing off for them. Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess so. A couple takeaways. One, there was a different leading scorer in every game.
Wow.
Which I think is notable.
That is notable.
Gervais Green was the first one. Deshaun Burke and Hennef Cheatham both had 20 in game two. Smarty Curtis led the team with 13 in game three. And then Charlie Easley, a walk-on, actually led the team game four with 15 points. So that is good. And I'm going to run through, this isn't really in order, but I'm going to run through scoring averages for all four games. These are all the players in a row. So this is how it went. 11.7, 13.5, 7, 8.2, 7.7, 8.2, 5.7, 6.2, 6.7, 5.2.
That's like the roster.
Yeah.
So everyone's between, I think, what was it, 5 and 12?
So basically everyone's between 5 and about 13.
About 13?
5
okay,
and 13.
Yeah.
Which tells me a lot of things. It tells me that they're passing the ball, that they're moving the ball. It tells me that everybody can bring something. And that's encouraging.
Yeah.
Because I think, especially in the last couple of years, Nebraska basketball has been really top heavy. It's been Teran Petaway, maybe one or two other guys, Teran Petaway and Siobhan Shields, and then kind of nobody else.
Right. Ty Webster had a big year that one season.
Ty Webster had the one big
Andrew
year.
Andrew White.
Yeah. Even last year, you know, it was James Palmer, but there were nights when James didn't really have it. And so it wasn't at, like, theoretically last year was like the most balanced it was supposed to be, but it was still really top heavy because you had four guys that were trying to score all the points. So, and then ironically enough, at the end of the year, kind of evened out a little bit, but at the same time it was Roby and then kind of everybody else.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think with this team, it's proved to me a little bit that I think scoring balance is going to be something to keep an eye on, because though Deshaun Burke led the team in scoring, you are on a roster in which a walk-on can still lead you in scoring. And what I mean by that is Deshaun leads you in scoring but doesn't hog the ball to an extent that he doesn't allow other people to score, which is what can happen sometimes on a basketball team. So I think that was super important. And then to keep it sort of brief, I guess, the main... And this seems like a coaching talking point, like something that you would hear Fred say just to kind of say on the radio and make it sound really good. But I think it's true. It's like, it's notable to me that he said when they got on the plane in Nebraska to go to Italy, it was kind of a quieter group and they didn't really know each other. And while they were over there, he could see them grow. He could see them goof around and talk with each other and hang out. And by the time they left, it was like a team. And so I think what happened was when they left, it was a bunch of guys from all over the country, all over the world, actually, who kind of knew each other because they were all wearing the same jersey, and they kind of came back as more of like, okay, we're a team.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important because now they know who to sit with at lunch, at the training table. They know who they can walk to class with. They know who's going to be in the gym early. They know who not to room with because they snore. Like, you just – and this is what happens when you go to the Coliseum together and you go to Lean Tower Pizza and you – are sitting waiting for a bus bored with each other because you're just sitting there in the Italian sun and you're like, well, this sucks. I might as well get to know, Deshaun Burke. Hey, man, like, where are you from? Like, so I think that's really important that they were able to go over there and do that. So, yes, they went 4-0, and yes, some on the court stuff was good. But off the court, just introducing each other and introducing the team to each other, I think was probably the most important takeaway.
Yeah, it's hard. You'll hear coaches talk about, like, and players will talk about too, just trust and how important it is. I mean, it shows up on the basketball court when, maybe you're shading off a shooter and helping on a driver or something, or you let a guy go knowing that you're going to have a defender there at the rim, or, you attract defenders as you dribble drive and you pass it out to a teammate. And he's there to take the shot. And so I think matters a lot.
It does. And I think it's what you bring up.
You can't build trust
good.
Without building a sort of a bond first.
So. Yeah. And I think the only game we were able to watch didn't look like a team that trusted each other, really, because they didn't move the ball. I mean, there was a couple plays in particular where someone would have the ball, and instead of swinging it for one more pass, which is what Fred wants, just, hey, there's the wide open three, someone would, like, drive and take a bad shot instead, or they would not look at anybody and they were just trying to score because, you're trying to impress the coaches and get a starting spot. It didn't look like a team that trusted each other. But the fact that a walk-on leads you in scoring shows me that the trust is starting to build, especially because one of the things that Nebraska was really trying to build up after that game was that Samari Curtis was the one that was initiating. He was finding open places for Charlie easily, and so all this stuff is kind of working. So you're right. I mean, trust is important and on the basketball floor, and so building that in any way is great, and building it in Italy is like fantastic. Yeah. Like, it's just perfect.
It's the best case scenario to have a trip for a team of all new faces to join up. When you watch that game, that first one, did anyone stand out as like, that was something that I didn't expect, or maybe a play that, or maybe somebody that affirmed your opinion of him? And again, it's just one game. I get it, but
but at the same time, Shamil Stevenson stuck out to me because I wasn't really sure what Nebraska was getting with him.
Is he sitting out? I can't remember.
He's in a weird situation right now where he would be eligible in like mid-December after the first semester. But Nebraska, they still, as far as I know, they have not applied for a waiver yet. But I know that they feel good about it because if they would apply for a waiver, that he would be eligible immediately. They feel good about that, those chances, because there's some precedent in some players that have been in almost identical situations.
So they're hopeful
him.
That he could play
right
at the
away.
Start of the year.
Right. Yeah, and so I wasn't really sure what they were getting with him, but he scored in each game. He scored 9, 6, 5, and 11. I think he's a better shooter than I thought. He's a really good attacker. Again, Nebraska's not going to be a great rebounding team, I don't think, but I think he'd be a good rebounding wing. He's just built different. He's built like a Big East guy.
Yeah.
He's built like a Big East guard, or guard forward, I guess. And, so I think there was a couple tip dunks, follow ups. He's a good defender. Like, he was someone that wasn't maybe the sexy pick because he wasn't in every single play and wasn't hitting all the shots or whatever, but he was just kind of everywhere and involved in everything. So that kind of stuck out to me. And then I think Hendon Cheatham's going to be really good too.
That's interesting. I got to see him a little bit at Marquette.
Yeah.
And he was just a guy.
Yeah.
He was a dude you could help off of. I mean, to be honest, like they had other weapons on the court, and sure, I mean, if you left him wide open for a three, he can knock that down.
Right.
But if there was a guy that on the court that you felt like, okay, well,
we'll
make him beat us before he beats us. It's cheap. But,
and I think that he's gonna. I think whenever he signed, there was this assumption of like, well, he's gonna be a glue guy. He's gonna be the leader, whatever. But then he goes out and he scores 20 in game two. And he's knocking down shots, and I think he averaged 11 is what he, 11.7. So he scored 7, 20, 12, and 8. And I don't know. I think we always assumed that he'd be a starter, but I think he might be a guy that, accidentally averages 11 and 11, right. 5 and 4,
It does seem like the system's going to be, it fits his skill set pretty well.
You need someone like him on the court who he's not as athletically dynamic as a Cam Mack or a DeSean Burke or
is he a three or four, you think?
He's basically the adult on the floor who like facilitates. He's the adult in the room that's like, all right, Cam Mack has made four in a row. I'm the adult making the executive decision while we're in transition that I'm gonna get it to him, And so he's important. And so I think about him maybe a little differently. Now we'll see once play actually starts, but I think he'll actually be able to contribute more than maybe I thought, on the offensive end of the floor.
Okay. Real quick. I'll get this. I want to ask this and then we'll switch over to Creighton. What I learned and I'll show you, but is it, I don't know if you can even answer this, but like, I wonder if there's like a concern or a thought of a, area of improvement that you have for Nebraska they're going to start practice in a few weeks, and I wonder maybe what do you think is at the top of the list for Fred Hoiberg? Because the hard part about asking that question is just because Nebraska started essentially just formed a basketball team a couple months ago.
It's almost like a replacements football team, know?
You don't even have time to formulate, all right, how good are we going to be on the glass, and in this situation, what works best here? I feel like you can't even make those determinations right now because you're just trying to teach guys how to play and get to know everybody, and that was the primary concern. But I wonder anything that you've just from watching and seeing.
I mean, they're not going to be a good rebounding team. They know this. There's nothing they can really do about it.
Yeah,
because they're small, and the Big Ten is big. So rather than saying, "All right, we're going to do some rebounding drills and get better at rebounding," I think one of the main things they'll talk about is how do we counteract how much we're going to get out rebounded? How do we make sure that we are shooting the most efficient shots exclusively? That way we're not one shot, miss other way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do we get back on defense really quickly? How do we force some turnovers? What kind of defense can we set up that makes it so that other teams don't just kill us in the offensive boards? So rather than doing a bunch of blockout drills,
which I would imagine they'll probably still do.
But I mean, like, instead of being like, hey, we're going to spend 45 minutes on rebounding today.
Right. Like, you have to get
and
better.
We're not moving on until we get 10 offensive rebounds.
They've accepted that.
You know,
I think it's going to be a weakness.
I think so. Yeah. And so I think that that's one thing.
How do you counteract that? I mean, it's a question for Creighton too. The Jays haven't been a great rebounding team during McDermott's tenure. No, they have been pretty good on the defensive side in terms of not giving up offensive boards, but they don't crash the glass.
Yeah.
And Coach McDermott's argument has always been, well, you can't be good at everything. If you were good at everything, you'd win the national title. So you have to sort of pick your battles. Okay, this is what we know we're good at. We're going to try to master that and then just try to hope that that overcomes the deficiencies. So, like you said, if you're not getting offensive boards and creating extra possessions for yourself, then maybe on the other end you're able to force some turnovers and create some extra possessions for yourself. Or maybe you're just so efficient on offense, you don't need those extra possessions because you're scoring at a high rate. And maybe on defense you can eliminate their efficiency.
Yeah. And basically, you know, I am not great at X's and O's football, right? But I feel like I'm pretty good at writing about the people on the football team. So I can do X's and O's stuff for football, but I counteract my deficiency on that by trying to do the other thing more. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So the basketball team is not going to be a good rebounding team, but they're going to do it, obviously. But they're going to try and counteract it with something that's more efficient, but better in that way. Right. So that is something I think they need to focus on. And two, just in general, integrating Cam Mack and Ivan Wiedrago. I mean, those are two extremely important guys who Cam Mack wasn't able to make the trip because he was sick. Well, first he wasn't eligible, and then he was sick. I know that he is healthy now. He's back. He's at home in Texas, I believe, working out with some guys. People want to follow him on Instagram. He usually posts what he's like working out. A lot of these guys do, like where they're working out, and what they're doing, and whatnot. Someone took a video of him that he kind of reshared. It's just like a pretty simple play of, you know, he's on the wing. Takes two dribbles, dunks on somebody. And the kid's like, not big, but he ruins lives. So how do you integrate him? How do you teach him the offense they just ran? Because he's behind in that way. How do you make sure that he's healthy, maybe gain a little weight? And how does he fit into this kind of, you know, accidentally jumbled guard rotation with Gervais Green, who played well in Italy, Samari Curtis, who played extremely well in Italy, Deshaun Burke, who played, you know, led the team in scoring in Italy, and now how do you integrate Cam Mack into that? And how do you do that while keeping everybody else happy? I think that's really important.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Ivan Wiedrago I don't think he actually made it to Italy because he wasn't in any of the team photos or anything like that. And even guys that didn't play, Derek Walker was over there. He's the Tennessee transfer and he didn't play in any games, but he was obviously there. So I don't know what's going on with that. He might have been there, but I just didn't see in any of the photos or whatever. But he, you know, theoretically could be the starter at five. Like, they need somebody to start at five. And I think Kevin Cross played well, but you got a sense when hearing Fred Hoiberg talk about it that he wasn't super pleased with two of the games that he played. He played well in two and then not great in two. And regardless, I think you need to play both of them anyway. And so, you know, Ivan has been playing overseas for a while. He's big, big dude. So how do you, you know, does he run the floor well? Does he move well? How much can he play, and, you know, in a row? It's almost like, I almost view them two as like a defensive lineman, where one of the things that's going on with Nebraska football with defensive linemen is, like, you know, with Damian Daniels, for example, how many reps in a row can you go? Like, can you do five straight reps? Right. Can you do five straight plays? And so can Ivan play six straight minutes? Can he play four straight minutes? Like, how do you sub them in and out whenever they're both tired? Who do you put at the five instead? Like, what do you just kind of, what they're going to do with those two people? Because, you know, those are two eligible guys. And also with Delano Banton, you know, you kind of have to take him out of the rotation now and kind of use him a little bit differently, because, you know, he's not gonna be able to play next year. So you can't be like, all right, well, we're doing first team offense, Delano, you know, or whatever, or even second team. Like, say, hey, Delano, just like try and like murder us on scout team. So just there's different dynamics that they have to kind of shift. They're almost a new team again.
Yeah.
Because they have to add two new guys and they're taking away one. Yeah. So I think a lot of it will be, you know, again, rebounding, because that's kind of nitty gritty stuff, and we'll have plenty of time to kind of go over that and talk about that and write about it. But it's kind of a new ball game again, because you've got these two freshmen who, I think, in a perfect world, play a whole lot for Nebraska.
Right. Right. So Nebraska is going to open practice. Well, everyone's open practice at the end of September. Nebraska's having a little get together.
Night.
Yeah. With for inviting fans in to celebrate the start of practice.
Right before the Ohio State game. It's going to be
I'd imagine
wild.
They do a three point shooting contest, the dunk contest, all the works.
Yeah. I bet you they'll scrimmage a little bit. Yeah. They'll do introductions for all the players because nobody knows them. Fred will probably talk. They do have a musical act, but they haven't announced it yet. Mm. They said they were going to announce it after the team got back from Italy.
Okay, so
it's coming soon. DJ Cool?
That's possible, I guess. What's he doing? Is he doing anything?
Nothing. He came in and performed for Mike Riley not too long ago. Lil Nas X is probably a little too expensive now.
Probably.
My guess on Twitter was Chance the Rapper. Because Chance the Rapper has a relationship with Nebraska already. Has a relationship, I think, with the Chicago Bulls because he was in Chicago when Fred was there. He plays in Kansas City the night before and plays in Chicago the night after. So he's got an open night.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's coming to Omaha too, I think, in October. Chance the Rapper is.
He puts on a good show.
Yeah, he'd be good.
And he has a new album. Anyway, right. So that's my.
So that's the plan. Practice starts very soon.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Month. What did you learn from Australia?
Well, let's see. I think, again, like you're talking about, we talked about sort of the competition level. Creighton played a team that was made up of high school, like, prep players.
Oh, really?
The best high school players in Australia, essentially, like an all-star team for high schoolers. They played that team, lost to that team, actually. Then they played Then they played a pro team, an Australian pro team, top flight Australia NBL team that only had maybe four of its normal players on the roster. Everyone else is up training or trying out or whatever. They beat that team, 29-point comeback, and then they beat another NBL team that also, I don't even know if it had any starters on that played. It was what they called an invitational roster, and beat that team pretty badly. So hard to get a gauge. And again, everything that I'm going to say after this, remember that Jacob Epperson didn't play. Marcus Zagorowski didn't play. Kelvin Jones didn't play. The grad transfer from Idaho State, who's going to add some depth on the interior. Tyshawn Alexander didn't play the first game that they lost and was kind of limited after that just because he had just played. And then Denzel Mahoney is kind of the X factor who transferred in from Southeast Missouri, but he's been away from the team for a personal matter. Supposed to rejoin the team when school starts in a week and a half. So we'll see where he... if he does that and what his status is, but that's five guys that could play next year. And, they weren't at, I mean, four of them weren't there and one of them was limited. So, but with that said, I thought the game that I saw, I thought I saw Mitch Ballack at a different level than he was at last year in terms of the way he was seeing the floor. He made a couple plays, just in terms of getting the ball to other players that I thought were notable to me. There was one that I didn't see in the third game. It was actually in the first game as a highlight. They just showed the highlight where he dribbled and just sort of tossed the ball up, and all of a sudden out of nowhere, I didn't even see Christian Bishop there, but here he comes from the baseline, catches it, and dunks it. Just one of those simple alley-oop plays, but Ballack drew the defenders. And it was funny because he did that a little bit in practice, and I asked him about it before they left for Australia, and he was just like, "Yeah, you just throw it up to those guys, man. Like, just they'll go get it."
Yeah,
and that was one thing that he admitted as a freshman, like he didn't that idea of just hey, going off the pick and roll, driving downhill, hit the roll man who's right there open. Not every time, obviously, but that's a staple to Creighton's offense, and it is a staple to a lot of teams' offense who. Run heavy on ball screens, hit the roll man, go into the rim, lob it up there because the defense can't get up to the height that roll man's getting up with the momentum he has going toward the rim. And to learn that sounds simple, but to do it on the basketball court is
it's different. I mean, there are different levels, especially if you're a kid like Mitch Ballack, who every time he gets the ball past midcourt is like, well, I can shoot it from here.
Exactly. And he did. And I think he dropped one in from like 30 feet out in that third game where he got hot in the middle of that game. And I think he made like four or five threes in a row over the course of a couple quarters. And it was like, I mean, that version of Mitch is pretty fun to watch because he's.
But there's a different level of like Steph Curry when he was a rookie in his first in his first, second, third year with Golden State was good because he was a shooter. He became an MVP whenever he became completely unexpected. You never knew what he was going to do with it. He could throw it to anybody at any point. He knew how he saw the floor. He was good at ball screens.
Right.
And that's the thing that I think if what you're saying, if I'm understanding right, is Mitch is starting to evolve as a basketball player. He's not just a kid that can shoot.
Yeah.
He can kind of become everything, which is interesting too, because they'll have him, and I feel like Tyshawn Alexander kind of is a little bit further on that too.
Yeah, he probably showed it in his game a little bit more in games. Mm-hmm. Tyshawn did last year, but they both have it in them, and Mitch has done a little bit more of that in practice lately to try to sort of get comfortable with it. I think in his head he's like, yeah, I can do this and this, but then it comes the game and you don't see that part of it as much. So I think that's one of his offseason goals is to create more and do more than just be a spot-up shooter. And, I mean, here's the other thing that's it's tough to argue, because he shot 42% from three last year. So, I mean...
It's just wild.
And there's a couple slumps in there, too. Like, mm-hmm. he's actually better than that. I mean, him taking a three, even a guarded three, is not a bad shot.
Borderline more efficient than anything else that they could do.
Right. So... I mean, he averaged 10 threes a game in Australia.
Really?
Attempts.
Attempts or makes?
No. I don't remember what his percentage was. I'll look it up in a second. But
I wish we didn't get box scores for Nebraska. So
yeah, so we Creighton was good to us in that they gave us some box scores. But so he averaged 10 three-point attempts per game. Hmm. To me, that's what it needs to be.
Yeah.
So that's the starting point.
Well, like, there's 12 a game. There's 12 points a game. Easy.
Right.
Boom.
Yeah.
Right there.
Exactly. I mean, because he's a 40% shooter. So yeah, he shot 10 a game and made, I think it was like 45%, 46.7%. It's 14 of 30.
Oh my gosh.
So I mean,
who shot 63? Oh no, that's free throw.
Never mind. So that, I mean, to me that was. You know, maybe he would like the ratio to be a little bit different between 9 2-point field goal attempts and 30 3-point field goal attempts, but I don't know. Like,
but,
again, if you're going to shoot 46%, fire those up.
Well, the other thing is, too, is those nine might be, I don't know. I think both the teams we cover now and in the bubble of college basketball today, it's shoot a three or a layup.
Yeah.
So maybe those nine were just layups.
Right. I remember he had a nice drive floater like along the baseline that was a good play, and he had a pull up jumper as well. But yeah, you're right. That efficiency basketball, man, like that's the new age. You if you can't shoot a three, then get to the rim.
Yeah.
If everything else in between.
If you can't get to the rim, then pass.
Right. That's not what you want to see. So quick takeaways. I mean, Christian Bishop was really aggressive and I think he's kind of shown a different element of his game and gives me just from a observer standpoint like a little bit more confidence in what they're going to do with the five. I think he can be a suitable piece there. I don't know if you want to put all the minutes on his shoulders because he's a sophomore, he's 6'7", he's still building strength, but he can certainly give you, like, he's learning how to play to his strengths even though he's a smaller five, but he's got quickness to him, and you know, he's working on his jump shot a lot too. So I think his improvement was on display in Australia. He averaged 15 a game. One guy, he's not going to play next year, but Antoine Jones, who transferred in from Memphis, he had like the most interesting stat lines during the, let's see what it added up to. So he averaged 3.7 points per game, but he led the team in rebounds, block shots, or rebounds, steals, and was second in assists. So he was like a stat stuffer who didn't score.
That's great.
And I'm really curious to see how his game translates into creates, because he's more like a three or a four for them. Mm-hmm. And he can shoot it well enough. You know, he was 0 for 3 from three, but he's a better shooter than that. But I wonder, like, how it felt like a lot of times he was almost like a facilitator at times. Like I said, he was second on the team in assist.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that out of your four man very much, especially not in Creighton's offense. A lot of times it's point guard driven and point guards initiate.
Is he initiating the offense?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't playing point guard, but he was just the way that the the half court sets would work, or how their flow would he'd end up with the ball in his hands, creating for others, that type of thing. And I think he's got one thing that he's gonna learn is a little bit or adjust to is just Creighton's pace and the way that they move on offense in the half court. Like Chris Holtman actually said it, formerly the coach of Butler, he saw Creighton a lot. Then went to Ohio State and they played Creighton last year. But he said so. Creighton there's two dimensions of Creighton's pace. One is just in transition. Obviously, you got to get back. If you don't get back, you're going to give up a layup. So that's one part of the pace. The second part of their pace is in the half court. The amount of movement that they have, how hard they move, how hard they cut, how quickly they pass the ball around. Like there were times last year where that things got stagnant, and part of that was inexperience. Maybe it was injuries. Maybe it was just those guys just didn't perform the way they wanted to. But when it's at its peak, and Chris Holtman's seen it at its peak when he was at Butler, it can be really tough. And I think that part of it is something that Antoine Jones is still going to learn, of how to play with pace in the half court too, and to keep the pressure on the defense and to make sure the ball moves and you're moving too. But generally speaking, I thought they had, it's hard to say. I thought some of the freshmen had good glimpses and then not so good glimpses.
Yeah. But let's jump to this because we're both at this point talking about these teams. We can be brief on this if you want, but what do we still have no clue about, or what do we not know at all about for the next month? So practice starts in a month,
right?
What do we definitely don't know?
Well, I don't know what's going on with Denzel Mahoney, if he's going to play next year or not. We don't know that. We don't know how healthy Creighton will be all year at the five. I mean, Creighton had two fives out in that tournament, or in the Australia trip, so we don't know that. I don't know how good of a ball handling decision making team they're going to be. They had they only turned the ball over. They had a 59-32 assist to turnover rate, so it's essentially 2-1, which is that's good.
Yeah,
but the competition level, it's hard to gauge. They weren't good in that department last year in terms of their passing, just making decisions, turn the ball over at times, not making the extra pass. I think that to me is a big key, because that obviously drains your efficiency, your offensive efficiency down. And when you drain that down, then you have to make up for it in other ways. And they weren't able to do that. I know you asked what I don't know. I think what I know is that they're going to be a good shooting team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think their guards, the depth that they have, especially in the backcourt, that they're going to give teams a lot of problems because they can hit you with waves.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they'll be more experienced, and they should be pretty motivated, because last year they just missed the cut for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
What do you not know about Nebraska?
You could argue that I don't know anything. You could make a strong argument. I think we don't know. Like, we don't know how this team is going to handle the grind of the season. And I say this because the one thing that's been clear, that Fred has made clear, is he doesn't love the way they respond to adversity. And this is a theme that happened last year. And last year's team didn't respond well to adversity, and because of it, lost 11 of 13 or 12 of 14, whatever it was. And when things went bad, they went super duper bad. So I think non-conference will be good for Nebraska, because they're going to have some really bad teams to play.
I was going to say they won't face much adversity.
Right.
They shouldn't anyway.
But when you're down 11-2 at Creighton with 17 minutes left, and Fred Hoiberg calls a quick timeout, and the health center is going wild, and it could get really bad quickly, do they punch back, or do they lose by 27? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then if they lose that game by a lot, then how do you respond after that? And when the Big Ten comes around, how do you respond when things aren't great with that? And this is a team that's going to lose. Like, they're going to lose some games. They're probably going to lose about half of them. And so how do they respond to that? Do they stick together? Is it, this is great that they're a team now and they like each other and all this stuff is great right this second. But I don't think we know that, how they'll actually deal with things like that. I don't know what they're going to do with their guards. I'm so intrigued by it because I think that they've got so much talent and more than last year in the guard play.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. And I guess I kind of consider Palmer more of a wing than a like quote a unquote guard. Yeah.
But if you, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's in the NBA. Didn't he sign a contract?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But my point being though, like if you take like Glenn and Nana Kenton and Thomas Allen
from a depth standpoint,
Cam Mack, DeShaun Burke, and Gervais Green, I'm not so sure I wouldn't take the
You're
other.
Taking this year.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. And then you add Smart Curtis to that. And so like, I still don't want to get into the who starts discussion, but I was thinking about this in terms of the bench. So I went back and looked. I was looking through Ken Pom, and Fred doesn't play his bench like a lot at all. When he was at Iowa State, he was in, I want to say the highest that his bench played in a season was like 22%, 22 to 25%
of the minutes,
which was among the worst in the country. And it was like 225 to 350. It was in that range somewhere in terms of like bottom third or fourth or whatever. So if you take that in terms of like, all right, they don't sub a lot. They play their starters a lot. Who kind of gets left out, if anybody? And especially of those guards, do they play all of them? Is there anybody that kind of gets lost in translation? I don't know what the rotation looks like. I don't know, you know, the Cam Mack element to this is super interesting because I think he could come in. I mean, they recruited him and said, you're going to run the show. And the show has been going on the last 2 months and he hasn't been part of it. So we don't know that. And then I don't know if we know if Doc Sadler's Twitter game is going to get stronger and like consume the whole platform or continue to just be excellent. I don't know. I think this team is going to be endlessly fascinating. I don't think we'll really know how good this is going to sound bad and weird, but I don't think we're going to know how good they are until the season's over or how good they were until the season's over. Cause I think there's going to be moments where they're going to look extremely good and we're going to think, man, wow, they could really make a push to NIT or NCAA tournament. There's gonna be times where it's like, yikes, they're not gonna make a tournament in 6 years.
Yeah,
you know. So,
but they are the way that they set it up. What's interesting about it is they when you build a schedule like this, because I've seen teams in the Big East do it, St. John's and Georgetown. It's basically you play nobody. They have a marquee game against Creighton, and I don't know who they got in the. Remember who they have in the ACC Big Ten. Challenge
Georgia Tech.
Okay, so yeah.
Real quick.
Go ahead.
Bench minutes. Okay, this is at Iowa State from 2011 to 2015. This is the rank. So I was off. This is the rank of 300 about 350 Division I basketball teams. They ranked in the first year 335th, second year 297th, and then 277, 329, and 238. So they just don't play that. They just don't play their bench all that much.
I guess my thought. Yeah, and just as a sort of building off that a little bit, because the schedule is easy.
Yeah.
And pile up wins. Mm-hmm. There's less of an appetite for dissent. Less of an appetite for frustration because you're winning, and it's
sure.
How can we question what's going on? Everything's mm-hmm. going great.
Yeah,
and maybe in some of those blowouts, you can get some of your other guys in.
Yeah,
and build some confidence and some camaraderie. So then, when the bullets do start flying, and you're in sort of the heat of the Big Ten season, things aren't going well.
Yeah.
Well, you already have November and December as built as a foundation.
Sure.
So it could work out that way. But the problem is when you build a schedule like that, you're essentially telling the committee that like we're not going to be an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't.
You're not going. The only way to do it is to pull off a ton of upsets in Big Ten play.
Yeah, they would have to. I mean, their strength of schedule is going to be horrible. Like, I don't think we're going to see Fred Hoiberg on, you know, March 5th live on, you know, Bracketology Today,
right,
making a case, you know?
Yeah.
And I also think that in a similar way that Scott Frost spoke about, like, year two is the year it takes off, year two might be the year that Nebraska really right. gets good. Because that means, you know, DeShaun Burke's a senior, Cam Mack is a junior. Like, everyone is a year older. If they bring in some recruits that can play right away, like, it's going to be year two is where you see it actually happening. So this year is going to be a little bit rockier, I think.
Right. Very good. Well, we've talked long enough. We were going to get into some recruiting stuff, but we'll save that for the next podcast that we do. And I would imagine just in a couple weeks to preview the start of practice.
Yeah.
So it's right around the corner.
I know. It's literally like a month away.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
I know. The basketball season apparently never ends. All right, Chris.
Who wins?
Oh, yeah. How did I forget?
Yeah.
Creighton, Nebraska. Well, let's see. At this moment, Creighton's down. I listed off all those guys.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm still going to go with Creighton, though.
Here's the thing.
I know what I know what I'm going to get from them. I don't know what I'm going to get from them. But what do you think?
I mean, Creighton did just lose to some high school dudes.
They did, yeah.
And I mean, that's not great.
They were prep school in Australia.
I think if Delano Banton can play, Nebraska loses by 8-10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're kind of making me think a little bit, though, because it's like, I mean, Creighton starting five is fine with what it is right now, but after that, it's freshmen and walk-ons.
Yeah.
That's like the rest of their bench, especially if they don't have Antoine Jones, who's a transfer. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think transfers are eligible. Maybe they are. I don't know.
Well, if Delano Banton cannot play, then it's like 15-20, maybe.
Well, is Cam Mack in? He's probably not in yet.
Nah, he's not
in yet. You can't count that he's in. Okay. Yeah. I feel more comfortable picking Creighton, but if we considered because right now, with the way the teams are formed, Creighton doesn't have some of its guys.
What we've always done is like second.
Right now, yeah.
Because there was a couple months ago where Nebraska lost on disqualification.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't have a team.
They didn't have a team. It was like Thor, Deshaun, Armon Gates, maybe a grad assistant.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, I got Creighton for now.
Yeah, I probably would too.
I mean, Creighton's going to be a top 35 team in the country.
While you were sitting there talking about Mitch Ballack, I thought to myself, man, Mitch is going to be good. Yikes, I also have Tyshawn. That's two of the best Big Ten or Big East guards.
It should be one of the better 1-2 tandems in the league.
They could go like 18 and 16 points per game.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I think that's probably
there. And
then
boom, you get some production from the bench and from big guys. You've got a high-scoring team. Mm-hmm. If they're efficient, I think they could be really good.
Yeah. All right. Plenty more to talk about when we join up again in a month.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Chris.